TB podcast, where we take you behind the scenes with everything nightlife, entertainment industry, strippers, sluts, prostitutes, fuck it, you know, all that good stuff. I myself actually was a stripper for 4 years, and I kept it from the world. I kept it from my parents. I kept it from my closest friends. I kept it from the people that lived in the same building as me in my apartment building. They thought I was fucking going to play poker every night till fucking 6 a.m. That's not the case. But yeah, it was a journey of lots of ups and downs throughout those 4 years. And, because I had no one to talk to, I chose to vent to my Google Docs that were basically like a safe haven for me. I don't know about you guys, but I don't really believe... Oh, this sounds bad because everyone goes to therapy now. I don't really believe in venting to people just because I, at the end of the day, don't feel like anyone really gives a fuck, you know? Like, at the end of the day, I'd rather just talk to myself, not have anyone to, like, use it against me in the future, not have anyone to, like, hold something over my head. I just want to be able to let out my feelings, and that's exactly what I did for 4 years. Whenever I would feel great, sad, shitty, angry, whatever it was, depressed, doesn't matter. I'd put it on paper, and I would talk about what happened at work that night. Usually that's what it's rooted back to, because I did work a lot. And now I just share with you guys every day. Every day that I had worked, I didn't miss a day. Not like I worked every single day. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about I never missed a day of, like, writing about my work day. But now I'm here to share with you guys and just continue to keep you entertained, educated, potentially inspired. Who knows? Either way, I just hope when you come in here, it's, you know, a safe place for you to talk about whatever the fuck you want to talk about. And that hopefully my life and what I, the stupid shit that I did, makes you feel a little bit better about yourself. Okay. So jumping into it, on the last episode, I had one of my good guy friends who I actually only met him a couple years ago, but basically he didn't even know I would, like I said, no one knew I was a stripper, but he came out to visit me with my friends in Vegas a couple years ago. That's where I first met him, when he was married. Which is funny, right? Well, no, it's not funny, because we're in our mid-20s. That's like a normal thing, right? The fuck? But now he's no longer married. So now he's out here living his best life, fucking whoever, right? Anyway, sorry, Keith. I digress. So he was on the podcast, but he had no idea that I was a stripper for those 2 years that he knew me. He knew once he arrived to my retirement party that I had in Vegas about a year later after meeting him, about a year and a half later after meeting him, he came to my retirement party and was like, what the fuck? It was like my coming out party of, like, surprise, I was a stripper. Now I'm retiring. I'm going to go do other things. And he's just become a really good friend. So it's funny just to be able to kind of see everything come full circle. And how much things have changed since I was in the industry, but it's been less than a year. Like, it's only been 6 months since I quit, and I still think about it all the time. The first, like, few months I fucking had withdrawals. Like, I was over here in the shower, like, damn, I really miss working. Like, you know, and sometimes I think about it all the time, but, it's probably, I always tell people stripping was one of the best decisions I ever made, but the reality is, not only is it one of the best decisions I ever made was choosing to strip, but I know that one of the best decisions I ever made was also deciding to quit. So, going into May of, oh my God, it's literally been like exactly 4 years since, or it's about to be exactly 4 years since I wrote this post, but we're going back to May 8th. Of 2019, okay? And I used to talk about this all the time in conversations with customers. So I would basically say, like, we're like professional athletes, right? We have shelf life. We have a certain time limit before we have to basically throw in the towel and retire. Now, you, of course, do see those older women in the club sometimes, like maybe in their 40s, late 30s. That isn't uncommon, but it's also not crazy normal. But basically, I talked about, if you think about it, us as strippers have similarities to players on the most popular sports teams in the world. We have star players who make a lot of fucking money, probably more than a rookie NBA or NFL player. And we're inclined to take care of our bodies. We're paid to perform and entertain. Damn, that's fucking true. We have a shelf life, meaning that we can't do what we do forever. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be that one 40-something-year-old in a fleet of young bucks Which is funny because, I mean, we talk, when you think of like someone really old in the league that is still performing, obviously we talk about like Tom Brady, but he just retired. Or like LeBron James, how old is he now? Like fucking 38 or something? Let's see. I kind of want to see. LeBron James is, because he's in the playoffs right now with the fucking Warriors. Go Kings. He is 38, bro. I'm on point. So it's like you think of these people that are older that are still performing. Like, that's great, right? But usually the women in the club that are 40, either they're really fucking good at what they do and they're going to continue to make six figures every year, or they made some shitty decisions like early on or throughout their time as a stripper where they just never decided to do anything else. They didn't set up their future properly. It's like you get started and you tell yourself it's for a little extra money, or you tell yourself that you're only going to do it for a year or two, or it's only until you get back on your feet, or it's only until your daughter's 18. I don't fucking know. But it's like you tell yourself you're going to do something. And that's the case of anything in life, right? Like you tell yourself I'm going to do this and only until this. But we look up and it's been 5 years, 10 years, like 20 years. And basically life has kind of passed you by. And it's not to say it isn't fun. It's not to say you can't make a career out of it. I'm sure you can. But I know that a lot of people don't exactly have the intention to be a stripper until they're like 40, 45, you know? Like there's a lot of other routes you could go. I remember one of the clubs that I worked at. One of the main managers, like this woman was the fucking top notch bitch. Okay. She used to be a stripper. That was like what she did. She's been around the block. She knows exactly what we go through. And now she's like one of the main executives of a certain club. And she seems like she does really well for herself. So, it's not to, if you really love the industry, like, yeah, go for it. But you know, there's other opportunities as well. Anyways, I digress. Who wants to work for that long anyways until you're 40? That was like me back when I was 21. Like I'm 25 now, but 21 talking about like who wants to work till they're 40. Now it's been 4 years and I'm like, 40 is not that old. We only make money when we go to work. That's somewhat true. I mean, I understand that like players get certain contracts and things like that, but there are performance clauses. Like they do have to perform. So what happens when we get sick? When we break a leg, if we have kids and they happen to get the flu, what if you don't have anyone to watch your child? What if you just don't want to go in that day but feel like you have no choice because of the simple fact that you don't have another source of income? Has you thinking, right? And it's so funny because one of my biggest fears when I was dancing was if I was to break my leg or an arm, and it doesn't even have to be at work, like anything, and I just can't work. And that was actually the case for 6 months before I quit. It was in February of 2022, 6-7 months before I quit. And I was at a friend's house. She had like really like slick slick floors, right? Like where you could slide on them with your socks. And I was drunk and I like was going to get the pizza and I fucking slid and like as if I'm going on a banana peel, like literally boop, bop, like on my fucking... what is that fucking thing called? I fractured something, okay, in my ankle. I cracked something, my fibula. I think that's what it is. That fibula is on your ankle, I think. Anyway, I cracked something on my ankle, and bro, I could not walk. I laid in bed for 2 days thinking, oh, it'll get better. The swelling will stop before having to go to the emergency room, get that shit x-rayed. Turns out I cracked something in my ankle. They wanted me to be in like a boot or some shit. And I was like, oh, no, no, no. So they wrapped it up. They gave me crutches. I was on crutches. And I told myself, it was at the beginning of the month, okay? Like beginning of the month. Maybe it was like a week into the month. But anyway, I was like, they were like, you need to wait 6 weeks before you can like walk on it again. I'm like, 6 weeks? I can't fucking wait 6 weeks. I need to work now. And as a dancer, I made some pretty like questionable money decisions where, and I'm sure anyone that's danced, like you can relate. The money comes and the money goes. The money comes in quick. The money goes just as fast. And unless you are like super disciplined with your money, which in my case, I really wasn't, you're kind of fucked. So if you're like taking a week, 2 week, 3 weeks off without like any type of preparation or like you not being aware, like out of surprise, you have to take that time off. Like shit gets stressful. So I did everything I could possibly do to speed up the recovery process. And after about 2 weeks of being in the house, I went back to work. And I remember like trying to put my damn heels on with my big ass swollen, bruised ankle and walking on it night after night after night until it just started feeling normal again. And I know for a fact it still hasn't like fully recovered because it still has like some tender spots. I rushed that healing process because I really didn't feel like I had a choice. And I even know how much I made that month. Let's see, because I have February. I still have some of my like work incomes. So I only worked in February. Y'all are about to know these fucking... I think that was my lowest month that I had made money. Where the fuck is it? Oh, here we go. Okay, 2022. I made $11,000 that month and I only worked 8 days. So that was my lowest month. No, it wasn't. July was because I got a surgery. That was 10. Anyways, I digress. That was like, I was having a shitty month. And it's like, I remember my first time ever making 600 one night. Oh my God, this is the best thing ever. My first time making $4,000 a night. Oh my God, this is the best thing ever. First time making $20,000 a month. Holy fuck, I'm fucking rich. Now I'm over here mad that I made $11,000 a month. Like, fuck, get fucked. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm over here fucking upset. But at the same time, like, yeah, I made $11,000, but who's not to tell you my expenses were 15? What if my expenses were 15? They weren't, but let's just say. So that's why I'm saying, like, one source of income is too close to zero, right? I just heard that recently too. I'm like, damn, that's pretty accurate. Because even though I was an independent contractor, even though I could go and kind of do what I wanted, you're still kind of owned by the club, right? They can let you go. And I'm a prime example. I've gotten fired from, I shit you not, every club I've ever worked at. And then I've been able to get rehired. So clubs are a little bit more forgiving because they don't have to go through like the whole firing process of like a W-2, right? Is that a W-2? W-2. Yeah, it's a W-2. Yeah, W-2. We're 1099s. So it's a little bit different. They can kind of like do it at their discretion, but still, it's a shit show. So that was one of those times where even though I didn't break my leg, thank the stripper gods, I did still crack I cracked my fibula and, you looked it up? Yeah, I cracked my fibula and I'm still probably going to pay for it down the line. I don't think I'll be sprinting anytime soon. So that's one of those things where it's just like, what's going to happen if your family member gets sick and it's like, this is the most important person to you in your life. This is the reason why you're making all this money because you want to take care of them. And then they get sick and you're like, fuck, now I got to take care of them. It's one of those things. And I've had so many times where I'll work and I'll get like work anxiety and I'll be like, oh, I don't want to go in today. Oh, I don't want to do this. Like a lot. And you just don't feel like going. But at the same time, it's like, there's a bill tomorrow. You got to go. It's no fun if you have to go. No one wants to have to do something. They want to do it because they want to, right? That's the whole point of like doing what you love, doing what you enjoy. You want to do it instead of feeling like you're forced. I don't think anyone really enjoys that feeling. And sometimes that's just what comes with the industry. So why do you think most NBA and NFL players go broke during offseason or once their prime years start fading? A small percentage of people actually last and know how to manage their money. You want to be in that small percentage of strippers that beat the odds. So what can you do to have a safety net and start planning like now? Well, I could sit here and give you all of my tips and things I do, or I can point you to the video below that helped me when I was looking for the same answers you are. And we'll go ahead and we'll link that in the description because I don't even know what fucking video this is. But I know for sure how to manage your money like the 1%. Graham Stephan. I fucking knew it. I knew it was going to be Graham Stephan. But one of the books that I can tell you guys right now, I read it during the pandemic and it's going to sound so fucking scammy, but it's called I Will Teach You How to Be Rich by Ramit. I might butcher his last name. Ramit Sethi. But he now has a show on, I want to say Netflix, about where he like works with certain people and he helps them get their finances back on track. Now, I read his entire book front to back and it was probably one of the most helpful books I've ever had. where I could actually apply right now. And I know I'm a little late to this for any of you guys that are like entrepreneurial and very motivated and love to read. I'm reading The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And I honestly hate it. I think it's way overhyped and it has no value. I think that all he does is, what if I fucking meet this guy? I don't want to be talking shit about him, but personally, reading the book, I felt like there was no really good action steps. It was more like just reflections and examples, which I know a lot of people love that book. I think the fucking title is phenomenal. Like, it made me want to read it. But the value inside is trash. And I can tell you right now, I Will Teach You How to Be Rich, as scammy as the fucking title sounds, the guy knows what he's talking about. I've used his information that he's provided and I've taken action steps. And that's kind of what I look for in books. That's kind of what I look for in anything is if I'm reading a book, if I'm watching a movie, if I'm having a conversation, if I go to a convention, right? Like people go to conferences and events and networking events and things like that. Like you don't have to retain all the information. You don't have to apply every single thing that's provided to you. But if you can just find one small piece of advice or a tip or anything, just one thing from that book or that show or that movie or that networking event that you can apply into your life, like that's all I need, right? One thing that could potentially change your life. And that's exactly what that book did for me. There was a lot of different ways that he went about recommending how you should manage your money and different investment accounts and things like that. There was a few that I actually decided to stick with, and it was more so just like doing like sub accounts, like having like main accounts and having a bunch of sub accounts that you go and you basically like divide your money into. So one of them being like an emergency investment account or emergency fund account. So having like a certain amount of months stacked up for what your expenses usually are in a certain account, having an investment account for like future investments. If I ever want to like go in on a business opportunity or certain stocks, I don't really invest in stocks, but just basically an investment account. So that way you're able to have that money on hand to invest instead of using your emergency fund, a tax account. Because if you're a business owner, taxes are something that you're going to have to pay. You're going to have to pay it regardless. But as a business owner, you usually pay higher taxes. And a few other different accounts. So I Will Teach You How to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. That's probably like best book that I've read so far, at least in regards to getting your money situation in order. The number one thing that I always make sure that I have kind of in line, like first thing is just getting rid of any debt, any bad debt that I have. That's like number one. Before I even like did an emergency account, I just got rid of all my debt because I'd rather like have that like a clean slate of all the bad debt every month than have like a bunch of money saved up. And it's like, I'm just waiting for my emergency fund. Like what if I never use it? You know, I'd rather just get rid of the debt. Okay. Anyways. So let's see. That is a link that we will provide below. But yeah, I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm like, we really are like professional athletes. We have a shelf life. We have to perform. We get paid to show up. It's really one of those things. You can't do it forever. So it's best if you're not doing it already, start implementing steps to be able to quit, leave your job. Like I quit without hitting the goal that I told myself I would. Like I told myself I was only going to quit once I hit a certain number of like deals in my business. And I only had about a third of those deals done when I decided to quit. But a part of me knew that if I was to try to, and I'm a very sentimental person. Like I literally have my fucking stripper named Ted on my middle finger. Like what? Who's man's? Like, why am I doing this? Why am I like this? But I'm very sentimental, right? So I quit right at my 4-year anniversary. I didn't want to quit on my 4-year and 5-month anniversary. Fuck that. I want it to mean something. I got this tattoo on my 4-year anniversary. Okay. Like I want shit to mean something. And I knew if I was to tell myself, you know what? I'll quit a year from now. I'll quit on my 5-year anniversary. I don't think I would have made it at these clubs another year. I don't think I would have lasted because I know how I am. I know my attitude. I know the way that I operate. They're only going to give me so many chances. And it's like, I just knew it was time to let it go and take a risk on myself and bet on myself. And that's exactly what I did. And I'm so grateful for it. I would not change it at all. I would not. So hope you guys got some value. Of course, as always, make sure to subscribe, comment. Hate comments are definitely welcome. We love those here. But of course, continue to stay tuned. We post these every week, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye.